Greetings to our listeners and welcome again to a podcast coming to you from MS Training Center for Development Corporation in Arusha. This podcast is brought to you as a collaboration between the Danida Fellowship Center in Denmark and the MS Training Center for Development Corporation, who are in a partnership to promote governance, democracy and green transition. Today we are going to be having a conversation about how to use indigenous knowledge to address the climate crisis. We are bringing together a researcher, a journalist and an activist to help us dissect the topic of how we can get indigenous knowledge to as many people as possible to address the climate crisis. To lead this conversation, I'm your host, Stella Agara, joining you from MSTCDC Arusha, and I'll be joined by a powerful panel of speakers who I will allow to introduce themselves.
My name is Sarah Mawedede. I'm a Ugandan and I'm a journalist. I normally do broadcast journalism, so I'm attached to radio. I'm based at Uganda Broadcasting Corporation, is where I work. As a content producer, I present, I also report news.
My name is Susan Mlangwa, and I'm a sociologist, and I'm based at St. Augustine University, and I'm a Tanzanian. I do my research in local communities and how they address local problems and everyday life. Thank you.
My name is Shubhendu, and I am a climate activist from the Asia. And I also support Youth Lead Climate Action at Action Bangladesh, and I mobilize tens of thousands of young people to demand climate justice in the context of our country. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shubhendu. Susan, I have a question for you. In your research work, are there certain complex aspects that you think you would need to break down to journalists or to activists so that they can be able to use in the community?
I have tried very much to communicate my research in simple words. Really, the key message is to show that we have to recognize and value indigenous local knowledge so that it can also be combined with scientific knowledge when our countries in Africa are addressing national climate change responses.
Sarah, as a journalist, do you normally find it difficult to get information about indigenous knowledge, indigenous skills that are used for predicting climate situation or for proposing solutions for the climate crisis? And if so, how can you collaborate with researchers to make that information more available to your community?
I may not say that it is difficult for us, the media practitioners, to find indigenous knowledge per se, we can find the indigenous knowledge. Maybe the problem would be when you find the indigenous knowledge, you go to the person, you interview the person, and you put that person maybe on air for others to hear. Maybe what I would say the challenge would be, if you get this knowledge from the indigenous person, let me say, perhaps a farmer or a herdsman, how do you put that information proper in such a way that you are able to chip in this information that is required and can benefit? And if we are talking about the three of us, the tripartite of us, as the media, the researcher, and the activist, where do I suit this information from an indigenous person? Maybe even in the local language, so that this person can share this knowledge properly. So we do it in a collaborative way. That is what I can say. Maybe it is the best way. Because if a farmer tells me there has been no rain for this period, yet we used to have it. Now our cows are dying. Our cows are shrinking in weight. So I say, what could be the problem? We don't know, but he's trying to mimic, to tell you, to draw the picture that this is happening because there used to be rain. Now we've taken a whole year without rain and my cow is dying. So I get to the science maybe to tell me what exactly it is. This change that this indigenous person is explaining, how is it affecting this? That is best how I can say. We can find the knowledge, but how best to put this knowledge out there on the media also matters.
If we push a little further, Sarah, is that information only supposed to come after you have gotten an interview where the constituency is asking, or the members of the community are asking what should they do, or they're saying they don't understand their problem? Or is there a way that researchers can consistently make the information from their work available to journalists so that then journalists can use it for telling stories about climate change?
First of all, I would say when a problem happens, the problem emanates from this farmer. The farmers or an indigenous person, they are the ones who feel first these changes. The farmer can tell you that there has been a prolonged drought in this area. It has been hot, it has been windy, it has been like this. So when a person tells you like that, you say, oh, this is what is happening. But you don't stop at this information alone. You need to amplify this information further by requiring at times research information to back up what this person is saying, to dissect in a scientific way what it is that this person who is local, in the local language, is trying to put out there. But on the other side, that yes, the research also could have also thought, like me, the media, that in a village, this one, there has been a prolonged drought. The person now conducts research. After conducting research, time comes for the researcher to disseminate this research. And when he disseminates this research, still it comes upon me, the communicator, to get down there for the person also to explain how this information is eating into what this person explains.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I want to come back to you, Susan, but I'm just going to leave you with the food for thought, even as I wait for, as I get Shuvendu to respond to a question. One of the things I want you to think about, Susan, just to respond to what Sarah has said, is how do you proactively package information in research, or how do you make research available in such a way that when journalists need it, it will be readily available for them at the time of reporting?
Okay, so for us researchers, we can have two ways. We actually sometimes have workshops whereby we can invite journalists when we are presenting our research findings. That is one way. And another way, we can also have an ongoing collaboration with a particular journalist and be able to share all the findings with them and also agree on what should be the action points moving forward. Especially so for this research, we have two phases. And today I'm reporting about the first phase, which is the secondary analysis of case studies in seven countries, which are showing actually the rich wisdom in how to handle climate changes or climate crisis. And from that data, the journalist can actually use that as a starting point. And also, there will be a second phase whereby we are going to go and do primary in our data collection on how the situation is on the ground and compare it with what we got in the secondary analysis. That too, we are going to share with the journalist so that they can use it to frame it in such a manner that we can change, we can disseminate it as policy briefs or leaflets or knowledge to different stakeholders.
Which of those two methods have worked for you, Susan? Is it the packaging to send, or it's the ongoing collaboration with journalists that works?
I think the ongoing collaboration is the one which works best, especially so now that as researchers we are thinking that we really need journalists to frame and communicate our research findings to the larger community.
Shuvendu, you hear Susan talking about packaging critical information about the different innovative ways that societies have used their knowledge to address environmental problems and matters of the climate. And Sarah mentioned that sometimes you require popularization of this material into local language. But you work with a very specific group, which is the youth, who do not just need language translation. They require something else into that kind of knowledge, that even if you're going to be talking about indigenous knowledge on climate crisis, they need it to be hip, they need it to be, you know, interesting, otherwise they will not take interest. What are some of the methods that you use to make information easily consumable for young people?
Okay, so there are many ways, you know, we can disseminate the information that we get from the journalist and the scientist. Like one of the processes that we provide young people the direct training from the experts. Like we have experts who, you know, consume the data from the journalist and the scientist, and they disseminate the information in a workable way so that it works for young people to generate their knowledge. That is the one thing. Another one thing, we use some kind of cards, flyers for social media so that, you know, we can disseminate information and young people can learn from either offline or online. There are many other processes that we, you know, sometimes, you know, prepare some kind of small report, you know, as scientific information is so much, you know, I mean, elaborated, and young, it is very difficult for novice young people to, you know, decode all those languages. So we make it easy for them so that, you know, young people can get the word, get the meaning of it, and, you know, they can use in their context how to, you know, respond to the climate change.
You speak about some of those complexities. I'm just imagining that you have developed a flyer. Is it a flyer that you distribute the same way you distribute to the community, or you distribute it through special mechanisms that young people get access to?
Yeah. Okay, that we can do, you know, we can make a group of young people and we can, you know, provide that information time to time, that what other part of the world is doing or what the journalist is doing. And we can capacitate the young people like the way, you know, if in any cases they require support, you know, our expert, like those who work with us, our colleagues, they can also provide them the, you know, support, and they demystify the information to the young people.
Sarah is a journalist and she's looking to get that information from that community of youth that you have trained. You have shared the flyers from Susan, and now she wants to get that information so she can highlight it to the rest of the world. How then do you connect it in those ways?
Okay, that we can do, you know, we can make a group of young people and we can, you know, provide that information time to time, that what other part of the world is doing or what the journalist is doing. And we can capacitate the young people like the way, you know, if in any cases they require support, you know, our expert, like those who work with us, our colleagues, they can also provide them the, you know, support, and they demystify the information to the young people.
Let me come to you, Sarah. In the event that there are young people who are carrying out activities, campaigns, events where they're sharing information, say from a research report that they've just gotten access to, what role can journalists play in ensuring that then some of the campaigns they do, some of the knowledge sessions they have, find their way into media outlets?
I think they have their interests as young people and as activists who are looking up to their future. As media, we dissect this information or we unpack the information. As they provide the information, we also demand the information from them for purposes of having it well done and consumable, scalable, to see that people out there that are targeted for this information receive it very, very well. And as you know, in the process of doing this, we need to know which information is going where, which audience is going to make a meaning out of this information. So if the information, if it is meant for the region of Africa, we get it. We can get that particular sector of the information. We make it so consumable to the extent that we make it well understood to the various youth, for example, being that is a youth, to the young people, so that we make it properly well done to get out to the people. In any case, like in the radios where we work, some of us, we use several languages or local languages. So when I feel that this information is going to be consumable by a group of young people, for example, in Uganda, I get this information translated from the language, which is English, if I can suggest so, from English into a particular language that this information is going to, for purposes of making this information effective and consumable by even a local youth who doesn't have a smartphone, who doesn't go on social media to get this information. But for me, as a journalist or a media person, I have the role to get this information down. And I translate in the local language, be it Lusoga, be it Chiwewa, be it in any local language that can be understood by some targeted audience. Yes, that's what we can do. But in doing so, we need also to work together collaboratively. You understand our work. Let us understand our position strategically. Then you also make us also understand what you aim at. So not that everything may be, for example, that you are going to put on social media is going to be grabbed, or every information that you are going to provide when I demand it is going to be consumed or used. But at least to get some of the information that we feel is relevant to particular audiences, we do it and package it in a good way.
Sarah, what I hear you saying is that this collaboration cannot run in one particular order. Everyone should be hungry for information. Everyone should desire to know what is happening in the other's corner, so that then information is available constantly to be disseminated to the people who need it. But I want to hear from Susan, what are some of the highlights of this study that you have done that the media and activists and the general society should be interested in?
Okay, so from this study, we have also been able to find out that this local knowledge is actually passed from one generation to the next, so that people can possibly be able to maintain their food security, be able to conserve their environment, and also they are able to find early signs of any disaster which is coming, so that they can make decisions to adapt. Therefore, because of this generational transfer of this knowledge, we are aware that we have to act fast. Because we have to act fast in the sense that we have to tap these knowledges from these generations which still have it, especially so knowing that the youth generation, which is actually a bigger portion in Africa, may not know this knowledge. So I also think that, based on this highlight, we need to have capacity building in terms of exposing the different groups which are going to collaborate on this to know what actually are traditional local knowledge in relation to climate change adaptation, and what actually are scientific knowledge, which are actually now being practiced in most of the African countries. Therefore, by doing that, then they can be voices to the larger community to bring change.
Thank you, Susan. I learned something very interesting at some point last year about a community in Kenya, Kikuyu community, that has been storing their seeds on the top of Mount Kenya, because Mount Kenya has glaciers. So it's cooler up there, and they had a mechanism through which women in the community would be the seed bankers and would store the seeds of the community up there. And one of the things that they did, Shuvendu, was to have young people escorting the women who were taking the seeds up the mountain. And while they were walking up there, they transfer knowledge on how seed banking is done and why that journey was important, even though the young people were accompanying them as warriors. So constantly there was transfer of knowledge from one group to the next. Currently, we don't have as many young people who are interacting with the people that Susan says have the knowledge, indigenous knowledge, on some of these things. How do we bridge that gap for the communities we work with?
Okay, the thing is that nowadays young people are, you know, less reactive to, you know, learn from the reading things, like they hardly read. The thing is that we are leading a generation, I mean such generation, where young people are more prone to, you know, creating some videos, creating some podcasts. So it's very easier for them when it makes them interest, I mean, to do something. So this can be done in different ways. Like if we can just, you know, I mean, club the interest of the young people and the club the interest of the media, which is video making or something like that, then it is very easier for young people to catch up. And if once it, you know, just promotes the interest of young people, you know, they will be with the things that they like. So here, media can do many things, like they can pack the information, they can make videos, they can, broadcast it through different medias. There are also something like young people want that the work may be interesting. So we have many change makers. Like not everyone we want to be the, you know, with us. But there are some young people who are working very well. Actually, in this change process, what we can do, we can, you know, invite all those young people to act like the way the scientists and the media people want.
That and I like that you're saying that we need to package the information in the packages that young people like for them to understand. And while Sarah was speaking, one of the things I was thinking of is women, for example. They may not necessarily consume their knowledge from TikTok, but we need to distribute this information to women. And the spaces in which women operate are a bit different from the ones that young people operate in. And sometimes the dynamic is not just a language dynamic, but there are other things. What are those things that we need to consider, Sarah?
The dynamics that we need to consider, especially, for example, in the media. We know that, of course, we are in an era of technology. Yes, that we are this era of technology requires that no one should remain behind. So when we are to bear this in mind, of course we have to go by multi ways of communication, for example. So if you try one channel, you should consider that there is again that cross-section of the audience, of society, that maybe might require another channel of communication. So the youth, of course, for example, they are in this era of theirs, which is the technology era. So that group that is okay with maybe Facebook, can have touch phones, can be considered that way. So when we go to collaborate with them, they can be brought on board, but there is a way we can work with them. Because even in media, social media is there. I can maybe be working for a traditional type of media, but we have also platforms online where we can collaborate very well with that section of the youth. Or we can even consider using the local channels, for example, for radio, where indigenous languages are spoken. So we can also get this information. We put it in the local language on the specific medium where we can channel this information down to the person we are targeting to give this information. So this kind of dynamism has to be conceptualized, it has to be assimilated, and we live in a way that we can work collaboratively very well without leaving anyone behind.
Thank you, Sarah. I'm going to give us a chance to make our parting shots, but even as we make our parting shots, I think I'm going to start with Susan so she can tell us where our listeners can get this information if they're interested in it, how she had intended that this information from her research paper should be used, so that even as our listeners access this information, they will be able to use it effectively.
Thank you very much. So this research, the first part is going to be a book chapter in collaboration with other scholars, and the book, once it is out, I will be able to communicate it with TCDC, and therefore they can be able to access the material, as well with the journalists and the activists who are here. And I would very much like that once we have this product, that it can be actually disseminated to different parties, including the networks which you are working with in terms of youth, and also in terms of the journalists, and also to have it also reach the policymakers if possible. And this means that we can actually work together to translate some of the findings there into policy briefs. And also I would also want it to reach to the community as well. And I think the community will be done well by the journalists.
Thank you very much. Susan, your parting shots to Vendu. How do we get this information to young people? How do we ensure that we keep them interested? How do we package it in a way that they will continuously want to know what indigenous knowledge exists?
We will not be taking the every part of the scientific report. We will only be taking the part that will be interesting for young people, and they are, you know, interested to work on that. So probably the findings that we'll be taking, and we will make interesting videos or something like that, or even a capacity building package, I mean manual, that we can, you know, just teach them, like in a training center. Maybe it can be a 7-day or 10-day training, and then we can, you know, disseminate the information that what Susan has, you know, found in his research. So these are the ways that we can you know, just disseminate the information, and we can act the young people like the way, you know, we want.
Thank you very much, Shuvendu. Sarah, how do you get this information to as many people as possible? How do you get and keep them interested in the topic of indigenous knowledge on the climate crisis and how they can use that knowledge to reverse the impact of the climate crisis?
First of all, to build the trust with the source. We build the trust with the source. We make that kind of collaboration. It becomes a relationship among us, the three of us, even more parties. So we want it to last, so that we eat into an arrangement whereby we all need one another to get out to the people. And to sum up, I would just say that this should be not a one-time thing. We should continue, even when new other things come on board. The media has to be considered to be part and parcel of all these activities that all, like the two stakeholders are embarking on, of restoring the nature, dealing with climate change. But when we build the trust and the transparency, or when we understand each one's position, or when we respect each one's ways of doing work, we move on. And to move forward, this, I feel, will work better for all of us. And the media will still continue being out there to do their role, to play the role of informing society, educating them for sustainability reasons.
Very well summarized. There you have it, our listeners. We had a very powerful panel assisting me in having this conversation. As I had promised, they have given you quite some information on how journalists, researchers, and activists can collaborate to ensure that our communities get the best information on matters of the climate crisis and how it can be dealt with. But specifically for our conversation today, we've been able to dissect how we can ensure that indigenous knowledge gets into the hands of the different stakeholders who are working on climate change. Shuvendu is walking away with a big question in his mind on how does he get this information to the youth, how does he keep them interested in indigenous knowledge, and how does he assist in bridging the gap that Susan says is growing because the knowledge transfer mechanisms that we used to have are dying down, and we've had quite a hiatus in the transfer of that information. Susan is walking out of this conversation with a very big question on how does she generate more information to keep these conversations going and to ensure that as many people are educated on this as possible. And Sarah is walking out of this conversation asking herself a very big question about how does she make sure that this information is available to women so that they can continue using it as custodians of indigenous knowledge, to the youth who are the biggest distributors of information right now so that they can be able to understand it best, to children who need to start learning and begin understanding the concepts very early in their lives, and to our governments and stakeholders who are making decisions about climate response so that they can be able to fix these recommendations from this study into the adaptation report. The assignment is huge. The conversation does not end here. Please join us in the next podcast for another conversation on climate change. But as we leave now, continue with the conversation, talk about indigenous knowledge and climate action, and keep the conversation going. It is us signing off at MSDCDC in collaboration with DFC on this very, very important conversation.